the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Friday, November 15th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Hawaiian Shirt Friday, let's do the Hawaiian Shirt Friday fight song. Sing it loud and sing it proud. Love this. Truly the sweetest sound this side of heaven. Well, let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration. Brain droppings or Naga nuggets, you get to make the call. And you can choose all of them if you like. It says here, handy guide to modern science. Number one, if it's green or it wiggles, it's biology. Number two, if it stinks, it's chemistry. And number three, if it doesn't work, it's physics. That actually gets a rim shot too, doesn't it? Yeah, there you go. And if it comes in over budget, it was made by a government contractor.
The United States government would never have, if the president, our president, had not, and as far as I know, that's the way it'll always be. Is that clear?
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Here we go.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happened on this day throughout history.
It sure did.
Some cool, some not so cool.
I was there.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Really?
You might be quizzed.
Sure.
You might be quizzed. Probably won't be, though.
All right, kids, it was on this day in 1965. Craig Breedlove set the land speed record of 600.601 miles per hour in his car, the Spirit of America. Now, he did this at Bonneville Salt Flats out there in Utah. What was he thinking? Probably something like, wow, this is fast.
Jeez.
And it was on this day in 1971, Intel released the world's first single-chip microprocessor, the 4004. It's kind of funny, but the only thing most of us know about Intel is... I know I'm probably a little late in the game in telling you this. You probably already know, but Tulsi Gabbard found a gig in the Trump administration, and it's a good one. Director of DNI, Director of National Intelligence. One thing I don't understand, there are a lot of things I don't understand, but one thing in particular is why do we have so many intelligence organizations? We have the CIA, we have the NSA, the National Security Agency, and we have the DNI. And I'm trying to figure out, okay, why all these agencies, do they overlap? Or are they three independent agencies working on their own? And how could that be productive? And one of these days, when I get more information on it, find out how that works, we'll talk about it. But right now, something that's kind of concerning is we have another alleged spy who was apprehended. A U.S. government employee arrested for leaking classified documents about Israel's military plans. Now, the FBI apprehended a guy by the name of Asif William Rahman. He's a United States government employee. Got him in Cambodia on charges of leaking classified documents. The name is interesting. Asif Rahman. Middle Eastern name. Probably Muslim. Now, this guy Rahman is scheduled to appear in court on Guam on two counts of willful transmission of national defense information. Now, the indictment filed in Virginia involves documents from the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency and the National Security Agency, the NSA. And this arrest emphasizes the ongoing challenge of maintaining confidentiality within government agencies, as well as the serious consequences for those who violate this trust. Now, the case serves as a stark reminder of the importance of safeguarding sensitive information, particularly when it comes to international relations and military strategies. This is something I'm kind of sensitive to because that's what I did for, oh, golly, a good 3.5 of my 4 years in the Air Force. Spent a lot of time saying grace over classified documents. I was basically a librarian by trade, but I was a librarian over classified documents. Now, the question here centers around classified documents that appeared on Telegram. Now, Telegram is a pretty popular messaging app, and they included highly sensitive information about Israel's military preparations in response to an Iranian missile attack. You remember that one that happened October 1st, right? We all saw it on TV. And this information was especially important, given that Israel later conducted retaliatory strikes on Iranian sites in late October. Now, the leaked documents were made available to members of the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance, which includes the United States, United Kingdom, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia. And this revelation calls into question the security protocols used in this intelligence sharing network, as well as the possibility of unauthorized access to sensitive information. This isn't anything new. This is just another incident. And it's serious. I mean, just because it's nothing new doesn't make it any less serious. Because the unauthorized disclosure of sensitive military information always has far-reaching effects, far-reaching consequences for national security and diplomatic relations. I mean, it not only jeopardizes trust between the United States and Israel, but it may also have an impact on Middle Eastern stability. You have to think of that angle. Now, the leak could have an impact on future intelligence sharing arrangements and cooperation among our allies, particularly in terms of regional security and counterterrorism efforts. And then again, this incident highlights the delicate balance between preserving government transparency and protecting classified information. It reignites debates over the ethics of whistleblowing versus the legal and security consequences of unauthorized disclosures. Again, we have a situation of who is going to be the judge of what is protected information and what should be made public, right? So this Raman case serves as a cautionary tale about the serious consequences that individuals can face when they choose to leak classified information, regardless of their motivations. You know, here again, it's like the old saying, the road to hell is paved in good intentions. Now, the arrest of Raman and the subsequent disclosure of the leaked documents drew international attention, as you can imagine. And as the legal proceedings against this guy continue, it's expected that government agencies, information security protocols will be scrutinized more closely. At least that's certainly the hope. Because this incident may prompt the implementation of more stringent measures to prevent future leaks and better protect classified information, particularly in agencies dealing with sensitive international issues. I remember the process I went through. Gosh, this would be back in 1969, probably around about February or March of 69. The process that I went through to get my security clearances in the Air Force. And they seemed to me to be pretty simple. I mean, yeah, a full background check, of course. And of course, I wasn't privy to what that background check consisted of. But it's just one day I went into work and realized, wow, here's my security clearance now. It's official. And it's on file. It was on file with the FBI. And I would imagine the CIA or whoever else would be involved. And on the one hand, it was flattering, but on the other hand, it was kind of sobering. And yet I still can't lose sight of the memory of how simple it was, at least for me. I was never brought in anywhere and interrogated. I was never interviewed for it. One day I walked into work and here I had all these security clearances. You know, so that tells me, at least back then, because we're, look, what is that, 55 years ago? I don't know. It just, it tells me that the process probably isn't as thorough as it should be when it comes to granting security clearances. I'm very pleased to report that California Governor Gavin Newsom is currently dazed and confused following the passage of Proposition 36. Let me put it this way. He's more dazed and confused than normally, okay? Because California's political landscape is shifting rightward ever so slowly, but it's going in that direction. Because voters just overwhelmingly approved a pretty good tough-on-crime proposition. The citizens out there have had enough. The small business owners have had enough. Now, the bill received, get this, 70% of the vote. A fellow by the name of Nathan Hochman defeated L.A. District Attorney George Gascon. I think Gascon made it for what, one term? Gascon was another one of those George Soros implants. And California Republicans, of course, they compete in House races and voter registration, and the current California governor, Newsom, recognizes the rightward shift. Now, California has long been regarded as a bastion of progressive politics. I've always referred to it as the land of the fruit and the nut. It's been that way during all of my lifetime, and I've been walking this planet for a long time. But, yeah, they're starting to see a significant rightward shift. And, okay, the word significant, what does that mean? It means detectable, okay? You can see it, you can feel it, people are talking about it. So, yes, there is a significant rightward shift, particularly in down-ticket races, because that's where it starts, you know? And the passage of Proposition 36, which is a tough-on-crime measure, with an overwhelming 70% of the vote, indicates a significant shift in voter sentiment overall. Now, this proposal effectively reverses California's 2014 sentencing reform, indicating that residents are increasingly concerned about public safety and crime rates. Well, how did California get to where they are right now? For instance, in San Francisco and I think also in L.A., if you are a shoplifter and you steal anything under a value of $950, that's a misdemeanor. And that's predicated on the assumption that you're going to get caught. But all too often, these shoplifters, these smash and grabbers, don't get caught because cops aren't even responding to calls for help. Which is why when you go to San Francisco, the big main drag in San Francisco, Market Street, which runs from the ferry terminal at the foot of Market Street and goes for, gee, I don't know how far that is, but it goes uphill for a long distance, and used to be on both sides of Market Street, was nothing but an endless row of retail outlets. Really neat place. Just to walk up and down Market Street was a pleasure. And it was fun the last time that I was in San Francisco. But since then, almost all storefronts along Market Street on both sides are boarded up. Now, that should not be the case in San Francisco. Not a beautiful town like that. But the town has fallen apart. And it's because of Democrat leadership. Democrat leadership ushered into office by the likes of George Soros and his cronies. So the quality of life there has just gone to hell. And one of the driving campaigns behind what got California to where it is right now was this concern about locking too many people up. Our prisons are full. Our prisons are full. Well, my attitude is, of course, I'm a Texan, but my attitude is if you do the crime, you do the time. And you're going to do the time in a place where if we have to, we will pack you in like sardines. And if you don't like it in there, straighten up your behavior. So the impact of this shift now, this slight rightward shift, I'm going to call it slight. I don't live out there. Maybe it's more than slight. But this impact of this shift is most noticeable in key electoral outcomes. Because in L.A. County, voters ousted George Gascon, which was huge. So they replaced him with this guy, Nathan Huckman, we just mentioned. And he's a former federal prosecutor and Republican turned independent. Now, this change in leadership suggests a desire for stricter law and law enforcement, law and order in one of California's most populous counties. I find it interesting that this guy, Huckman, is a Republican turned independent. I'm wondering if maybe that was just a tactical move. Maybe he felt he couldn't win election as a Republican, so he became an independent. What do you want to bet that's the case? But this rightward shift extends beyond criminal justice issues. Because voters rejected a ballot measure to raise the minimum wage to $18 an hour. It's $15 now. As well as another proposal to control apartment rents. Ah, yes, rent control. We all saw what that did for New York, right? So these decisions are reflecting a more conservative approach to economic policy, with a preference for business interests over progressive labor reform. And it's understandable. My God, look what they're paying for taxes out there. Look at what housing costs in California. Now, Republicans have made a few significant strides in voter registration and engagement. And under the leadership of California GOP chair Jessica Millen, Jessica Millen Patterson, Republican voter registration increased by, are you sitting down? 800,000. That's a significant number. And this increase in Republican voters has resulted in competitive House races for a change, potentially altering the balance of power in California's Congress. You know? Now, concerns about rising crime rates appear to be driving a lot of this shift, which, if you've been following the news out there, is so understandable. The issue of violent crime. Violent crime in California increased by 15% between 2020 and 2023. That's a lot. And property crime increased by 5.5%. And this increase in criminal activities caused a lot of voters to question the efficacy of progressive criminal justice reforms enacted in previous years. I mean, across the state, voters are really concerned about public safety and they're frustrated with incumbents, naturally. I mean, there's finally a challenge to California as a one-party state. And this Proposition 36 seems to be the catalyst. Now, it's going to increase penalties for theft and drug crimes. And it's gotten a lot of support from business interests, of course, including major retailers have expressed a lot of concern about property crime and retail theft. Again, it uses the example Market Street in San Francisco. The measure also includes a rehabilitation option for nonviolent drug offenders. And that appeals to voters who want a balance between punishment and rehab. Now, despite the rightward shift, Governor Newsom and Attorney General Rob Bonta continue to promote progressive values. I find that to be an oxymoron. Progressive values. While opposing conservative policies. And Newsom, in particular, is positioning himself as a national leader in opposition to Trump with the possibility of rising to higher office. Now, the election results reflect California's very complex political landscape. Complex to the point where most of the rest of us in the country just don't understand California. How many years have I carped about California? What are these people thinking? I mean, I don't understand California any more than I understand Minnesota. So they have a complex political landscape out there where voters are seeking a balance of progressive ideals I guess they want to hang on to those and then practical solutions to pressing issues like crime and economic stability. I mean, the state right now is wrestling with these competing priorities, and they do compete. And the outcome of this political shift is no doubt going to have far-reaching consequences for California's future policies and role in national affairs. I think for many years to come, we're still going to be looking at California as the example of you don't want to go there. As you now know, Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy are tasked with cutting down the $6.75 trillion that the federal government spent in 2024 under their new Department of Government Efficiency. DOGE. Is that Doge or is it Doggy? Now, the group is going to work outside of the government to dismantle bureaucracy / excess regulations, cut wasteful expenditures, and restructure federal agencies. And that, of course, is according to a statement from Donald Trump. A fellow by the name of John Hart, who's CEO of Watchdog Open the Books, which monitors fiscal waste, says they're going to curb spending that's been on autopilot where there's no real thought or purpose behind it. Now, finding areas to cut isn't hard, really. I mean, you got a lot of jaw-dropping examples that are actually admitted in the government's own reports. This is what's so bizarre. They know about this stuff in the government. Now, here are some of the first gravy trains expected to be derailed. In 2023, the federal government shipped $1.3 billion in checks to dead people from the IRS, Medicare, and assorted veterans groups. And this is all according to Real Clear Investigations. According to Hart, it could easily be stopped. He says the Treasury Department has a do not pay list, and these people should all be on it. But there's no cross-checking between the agencies paying out and the Treasury. Prisoners thought to still be free and out of work received $171 million in unemployment payments or Social Security in 2023. Medicaid and Medicare also sent out $101 billion in improper payments, largely due to fraud. Oh, yeah, and tax cheats. Tax cheats took the IRS for at least $546 million. Now, I know when it comes to the overall scope of things, in government money, $546 million doesn't seem like a whole lot. Get a load of this one here. In 2021, the National Institutes of Health, the NIH, you know, think Dr. Fauci, awarded $549 million, I'm sorry, $549,000 to a Russian lab performing experiments on cats, including removing part of their brains and seeing if they could still walk on treadmills. Now, what in the world could the purpose of that possibly be? Who knows? American taxpayers also shelled out $4 million last year for Joe and Hunter Biden to go on a trip to Ireland. And that included $1.2 million on an elaborate sound system and light show for a Biden speech, and $760,000 to rent out an entire hotel in Dublin. Spending by the NIH includes $33 million to a firm which runs Monkey Island. Now, this is a colony of around 3,000 primates sent to research labs. And additionally, NIH grants totaling $3.7 million funded a study on monkeys and gambling. Monkeys and gambling. Part of another $12 million went to the University of Mississippi to test monkeys on methamphetamine. And a Florida lab got $477,000 to help fund research into transgender monkeys. You know, males injected with female hormones. Good Lord. You know, maybe Glenn Beck is right. Maybe we are on the threshold of the end times. The COVID-19 pandemic's over, of course, but spending hasn't stopped. You got FEMA. I love FEMA. F-E-M-A. failure to effectively manage anything, expecting to spend another $70 billion on the pandemic by August of 2026. And meanwhile, Tony Fauci has been receiving $15 million worth of security detail this year, despite being retired. He basically has a limo driver and armed guards. And that's according to Senator Rand Paul. Presidents get that for a while, but they're the only people in our country who get that. Anthony Fauci? I thought that son of a gun was put away to retirement. But oh no. He must have 8x10 glossies on a lot of high-ranking government officials or something. And, how about this? The State Department awarded a $20,600 grant in 2022 to a center in Ecuador, according to the tracker at usaspending.gov. In other words, the government is aware of this. And that grant was used for 12 drag theater performances and a 2-minute documentary on drag queens. I mean, this gets more and more bizarre the further you go into this thing. You got federal agencies that are using average 12% of space in their headquarters, according to a March report from the Public Buildings Reform Board. So the GSA, you know, the General Services Administration, spending $2 billion annually to maintain government-owned offices and $5 billion to lease space they're not even using. And then, of course, Department of Health and Human Services hired 294 employees at a cost of $38.7 million to oversee DEI. And that was reported by Open the Books. And then, of course, the State Department handed nearly $58.7 million to China between 2017 and 2022, according to Open the Books. Nearly 100,000 of that was used to promote gender equality through the use of New Yorker magazine cartoons. Yes. Oh, and there's so much more on this. I wish I had more time. But you get the idea. So it looks like Elon and Vivek have their work cut out for them big time. All right, let's hit up the Comedy Corner with Joe Bronzy.
How are you, sir? You all right? How'd you meet her?
At work.
At work. What was that? What were you doing?
Building gun safes.
Building gun safes? That's the sexiest thing I've ever heard in my life. I got a line that could close dry bar, sir, right now. So what was your job? What was your part of the gun safe? There's levels of complexity. If you were just the handle, that's different. But if you were the thing.
I was in sales.
You were in sales. Okay, but you said building gun safes. But you were in sales.
It was the manufacturing company.
It was the manufacturing company of the, and you, how would you, like, what was your sales pitch for gun safes? You would go into their house when they weren't home, steal their guns? And then knock on their door. Bet you wish you had a gun right now. No, go check, I'll wait. That would work, good for you. And what did you do for the gun safe company?
I was in sales.
You were in sales as well, you were both sales. Did you compete? Like, you know, quotas and contests and everything? And that built the tension between the two of you? Some of you married couples, come on, you're gonna go home and play gun safe salesman tonight. You are. You're married, that's fine, that's all right. Sometimes I don't even know what I'm talking about. So how did he finally ask you out? You're a very attractive woman, sometimes that can be intimidating. How did he finally do it? Was it romantic? Did he put like a little card in a gun safe? And you open it up and it says, bang, I love you. Is that maybe?
I call it the aggressor.
You were the aggressor.
I let him know I broke up with my boyfriend. So he could find me.
You let him know you broke up with your boyfriend so that he could ask you out. but men are pretty stupid. So you're like, I broke up with my boyfriend. I'm single, and you're taking me to... You're a salesman, good for you. What you didn't know was you set the tone for your entire married life. With everything, she was always gonna talk to you as if you were stupid, sir. Sometimes men are, sometimes they're not, but you set the bar right at stupid. Which is kind of good in a way, because you can't do anything wrong. That's a strategy. I like that.
Have a terrific weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Monday's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time this weekend just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?